Hey, and welcome to the Bossed Up Podcast, episode 409. I'm your host, Emily Aries, the founder and CEO of Bossed Up. And if you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you probably know that I'm a big believer in a targeted job search. The whole buckshot approach of applying to every job under the sun does not work, especially in today's day and age where both employees and employers, frankly, are overwhelmed and inundated with the sheer volume on both sides of the job search equation. And so if you're going to be targeted, if you're going to be strategic, if you're going to be, frankly, choosy about what jobs you're willing to apply to or spend your time to really craft a targeted, persuasive, and compelling case to match your past experiences to this potential opportunity, what are the opportunities you should skip? This is a question that came up in a recent Hired Office Hours. Every single month, I have an hour-long Q&A call open to anyone who's taken our Hired program anytime in the past. So we have both the Hired On Demand self-study course and my live three-month-long job search accelerator. And my monthly Hired Office Hours are open to both members, folks who've gone through the self-study version or the three-month version, no matter how long ago you were in the program. So it's just a continuous opportunity to get coaching on the job search. And it was interesting to hear this question come up because it's true. If you're going to make the decision about which jobs to spend quality time creating high-quality applications for versus which job opportunities to pass up, how do you decide which opportunities you should skip? And so here are four things I think you should look out for, four red flags, if you will, that indicate perhaps this is a job opportunity or a job opening to pass on. The first is simple. You love the organization. You are super excited about the employer, but not the role. So often I find a lot of my job search clients get really excited when their dream company has an opening, but then realize pretty quickly upon decoding the job description and taking a really close read through the job description that actually that job sounds terrible. So a job that's not a good fit for you within an otherwise wonderful company is often not worth the trouble. And so really pay attention to the role itself, the job duties and responsibilities, not just the organization that you're excited about. On the other hand, my second red flag to watch out for is when you love the job, the day-to-day duties and responsibilities seem awesome, but the organization has some potential major flaws. Now, look, you don't need to necessarily love where you work. I understand the privilege inherent in that presumption. But if the organization is like fundamentally at odds with some of your core values, you're not really setting yourself up for success long term. And I think long term is key here because I'll end this episode by acknowledging that a bridge job is a wonderful, perfectly fine alternative. But if you're looking to make like the next career move for yourself, and you are looking not just to get whatever job immediately ASAP to bring cash in the door, but rather, is this a job I can grow in? Is this an organization I can thrive in? Then you really have to consider, you know, how far outside of your own values you can stray for a great job at a not so great organization. That would just be something to proceed with caution about. I've actually had clients who are willing to apply even for an organization they're a little questionable about. And then it becomes their job as a job seeker to really interrogate the company during the interview process. I have an episode on how to interview the company that's interviewing you. And that's when that skill set becomes really, really important. So if you are not going to skip a job posting whereby you love the job, but not so much the organization, at least proceed with caution and proceed with the mindset that you really have to do your due diligence before going from application to signing on the dotted line, because the job interview process will be your time to vet them. Okay, my third red flag to watch out for is when you feel resentful simply by reading the job description. I've had some job search clients who are absolutely dumbfounded by reading a job description and saying, this is the job of three people. Like, how could they possibly be hiring just one person for this? Or an exasperated professional said to me, you know, how could they possibly think that this is enough money for this role and these responsibilities? And if that is the feeling that is elicited in you when you are simply reading the job description, you cannot set yourself up to be pissed off and angry on day one. So, you know, validate your own inner experience. If you are feeling resentful and angry and like ready to stick it to the man upon simply reading the job description, this is not a job that's going to work out for you. So hard pass and give yourself permission to hold out for something better, or just reserve some space in your psychic energy for something better to fill that void. And finally, my last red flag to watch out for is more related to imposter syndrome. I had a job seeker in our hired office hours say that when they were reading a job description and considering whether or not to apply for it, they asked themselves, am I applying because I want the job or because I know I could do it? There is some comfort in staying within the confines of our comfort zone. There is comfort in applying for a job that you feel like 100% qualified for. And yet, that's not always the most compelling and persuasive case to be made. People reading your application want to know why you want this opportunity. Why would this opportunity be a growth narrative for you? How would this be a logical next step for you? And if it feels like it's just a rinse and repeat of something you've done before, I've found that as a hiring manager myself, I'm left sort of with a raised eyebrow wondering, is this person going to be here for the long haul? Can they find real success and progress here for themselves? And if they're just applying to this because they have done exactly this job before and they feel confident in their abilities to do so again, do they really want the job? And so I think it starts by asking that question to yourself. If you're going to go through all the trouble of being a high quality job applicant in a high volume, low quality job market, which we live in nowadays, with the rise of the one-click easy apply applications on LinkedIn, and frankly, a lot of lazy applications are being submitted out there, and job seekers and job recruiters alike are just lost in a sea of candidates who are not qualified and or well-positioned for the positions that people are recruiting for. I think that's the question we all need to start with. Do I actually want this job? Or am I simply craving the comfort of feeling 100% qualified and therefore getting this application out, going through the motions of feeling a perhaps false sense of progress on my job search because I feel scared and I feel vulnerable and I feel frustrated and overwhelmed. And so I'm going to stay in my lane, stay well within my comfort zone, and just try to make the case as to why I want this job when I truly do not. Guess what? If you don't really want the job, it's going to be pretty obvious. If this isn't a step forward for you, if there isn't some growth potential here, you might not be able to make a very persuasive case as to why this is the logical next step for you. So ask yourself first, do I really want this job? Because I'll tell you what, people who are reading your application want to believe that you really want this job. People want to hire people who they think want to be there. So that can be a hard charade to keep up, not only in your application and interview, but on day one and beyond. So really starting with a clear sense of internal motivation. What is motivating me to apply for this job? If it's fear, if it's scarcity, if it's vulnerability, that's going to be a really limiting factor in making your persuasive case as to why you're the best candidate for the role. Now, all of that being said, this is all a very privileged conversation, okay? If you even have the opportunity to ask yourself, which jobs should I not be applying to? How should I execute my very targeted job search? How can I be strategic and choosy in navigating this next career move? There's some inherent privilege wrapped up in those questions, right? We're not talking about having your back against the wall of feeling like you're going to be evicted tomorrow if you don't bring home some bacon. Like, that is a fundamentally different situation. The brain doesn't always see it that way. We fear, you know, this abstract sense of failure sometimes as severely as being kicked to the curb tomorrow. And those two things are not the same. So we have to check our fear-based job searching sort of response, our own internal stress response, and how much that is driving our decision-making as job seekers. If you are facing significant financial constraints and crises, that's a perfectly valid experience to have in this capitalist messed up world that we live in. And this doesn't apply to you. This advice does not make sense if that's your situation. In fact, I have an entirely different podcast and blog post on the benefits of a bridge job. And I highly recommend you check that out because a bridge job can help you bring in some cash while you are in the in-between. This is not a job that is a significant career move for you. This is a job that tides you over. So if your back's against the wall, if you're feeling cornered, facing extreme financial stress, a bridge job is a perfectly fine path forward. And I've got advice for you in that instance. We have to recalibrate our response and not overfunction or underfunction in the face of job search uncertainty. We have to be strategic and mindful about what makes the cut, what meets the threshold that is worthy of a high quality job application, because that takes time. And then we have to be willing to say no to the rest. Otherwise, you're going to be job searching all day, every day. You're going to burn yourself out. You're going to start submitting lazy, crappy applications that get you nowhere, but give you the sense of, oh my God, I've put 100 applications out and haven't gotten a single interview. I'm unhirable. And that doesn't help anyone. But I do hope that this episode helps you decide which job postings to pass on so you can make room and make time to submit high quality applications to the opportunities that are worth it. And keep in mind, it can take a while to find those opportunities. They don't all find you at the same time, right? You gotta be willing, if you can, to give yourself some time to figure it out. The average job search prior to 2020, according to Randstad, took 5 months. And shit has only gotten more complicated since then. So I highly encourage you to be strategic and be thoughtful about what makes the cut and what doesn't. And as best you can, I know in this challenging and uncertain world, try to afford yourself the time to make your next move your best move yet. You can find today's corresponding blog post at bossedup.org/episode409. That's bossedup.org/episode409. And I want to hear from you. What's your take? What would you add to this list that I left off? Let's keep the conversation going in the Bossed Up Courage community and in the Bossed Up LinkedIn group. I'll link to both in today's show notes. I'll also link to those other episodes I mentioned. But if you are looking for additional support in your job search, don't sleep on our Hired Job Search Accelerator, which is available on demand right now at bossedup.org/get hired. That's bossedup.org/get hired. And until next time, let's keep bossing in pursuit of our purpose. And together, let's lift as we climb. Let's face it. Speaking up at work can be really hard to do, especially for women and women of color. When the stakes are high and you've already worked so hard to just be the only woman in the room and you want to get everything right, you want to have all your facts and figures accurate before making your voice heard, it's just so much easier to stay silent instead. Researcher Deb Jahansky calls this loss of voice phenomenon. And it actually emerges in adolescent women at greater rates than men, and it sticks with us for the rest of our lives. Self-silencing behavior can actually become an unconscious habit unless we consciously engage in practicing our assertive communication skills. And we here at Bossed Up have set out to help women like you do just that. Speak Up, my live assertive communication course, is back open for enrollment, and we're kicking off a new cohort launching this June. Over the course of 8 life-changing weeks, you'll have access to interactive online curriculum and live weekly practice sessions where you, Irene, and I, and a cohort of fellow Speak Up bosses who are owning their voice, overcoming the social messages that have taught us to keep silent, and really learning to strategically and assertively communicate when it matters most, will actually have the practice time to rewire our brains, create new neural pathways, and build better habits when it comes to speaking up with confidence and precision and assertively communicating in the workplace. Learn more and enroll today to secure your spot at bossedup.org/speakup. That's bossedup.org/speakup.